you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson. Today, joined by longtime Bulls play-by-play announcer Neil Funk. Coming up on the show, we're going to review some of Neil Funk's thoughts about ESPN's documentary, The Last Dance, and travel down memory lane with the longtime voice of the Bulls. We're also going to explore some of Neil's early stages of his career, calling championship seasons for the Philadelphia 76ers, and talk to him about what he misses from calling games in what was supposed to be his final retirement season.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
We are thrilled to be joined by a man who needs no introduction, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Chicago Bulls, Neil Funk, who we last heard publicly on March 10th was the last game, Neil. Hope you and yours are well. What you've been doing with your time since this crazy reality that we're living in now?
Yeah, same thing everybody else is doing. It's like Groundhog Day. You get up and you try to sleep as late as you can. I got that tip from my pal Al McCoy and out in Phoenix. He said, sleep as late as you can. It'll shorten the day.
So, nothing.
Just trying to, stay healthy. And so far, my family's healthy, and we're moving along. This is who would have expected this? It's been a tough and trying time for a lot of people. So I really feel for them.
Yeah, and obviously you got to keep the larger perspective. But with basketball being such a large part of your life for so long, how difficult has it been to go without broadcasting games for you?
Well, I was getting kind of close to the end, but I never expected it was going to end the way it did. I still thought I'd, have a last home game and a last game in Boston. And, obviously that didn't happen. So it's been tough, without any sports, and sports can really bring people together. That part of it's been a little – I don't want to say off-putting, but it's been difficult from the standpoint that, you had something to do and all of a sudden you don't.
Right. It's crazy for all of us, yeah, which is why we're sitting here taping a podcast via a Zoom call, right?
Yeah. I've done a lot. I mean, thank goodness for The Last Dance because, at least you have something to look forward to all week.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to get into that right now, actually. We'll get into your situation and your swan song a little bit later in the podcast. But obviously, The Last Dance would be a popular thing no matter the time. But given that it's been released during a global pandemic when everybody's just sitting at home, there are a lot of eyeballs on this documentary. What have you thought of the first six episodes so far? And how fun has it been for you to kind of go down memory lane?
Well, that's it. I think it's very well done. And at times it's riveting to watch it. Even though I was, went through that, traveling with the team and being around them all the time in that last year, a lot of stuff that they've shown through these first episodes has stuff that sometimes you forget about that. This happened or that happened or, oh yeah, I remember when. So that's been kind of cool to see those memories kind of come flooding back. But so far I think it's been extremely well done.
You've been around a lot of great players throughout your career and called a lot of Hall of Fame careers. Obviously, Michael Jordan, to me, is unquestionably the star of this documentary. He does not, as we all know, cooperate much with media interviews. So to see him kind of sitting here in real time, breaking things down, to me has been absolutely riveting. What are your memories of, you know, broadcasting Michael and getting to know Michael behind the scenes, and what's it been like for you to see him, you know, give these present day interviews?
Well, the one thing that that struck me right away was when they first started showing, you know, a lot of clips from earlier in his career, kind of, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, the greatness. I mean, we all know he was great, and maybe the greatest ever. When you see those clips, it just kind of reinforces it. I mean, some of the things that he could do, you forgot. I used to tell people all the time, the one thing that was so enjoyable about doing those games was that every night you knew you were going to see something you'd never seen before. And you watch those clips, and some of the plays that he made were just jaw dropping.
No doubt. Yeah. And, you know, one storyline that was coming out before the documentary, Neil, was Michael almost worried that some people might think he was a jerk at times or what have you. But, I mean, that to me is what made his greatness. And I don't know, what's your take on that, and how you think he's, portrayed himself throughout these first six episodes?
Well, I you know, as you said, it's nice to see him sitting down and kind of opening up. You mentioned the fact that, you know, he might have been concerned that people would perceive him, in a way that maybe wasn't flattering to him. But back to your point of a moment ago, that is what made Michael different and what made Michael great. And if you look at the great players, I mean, look at Larry Bird. I mean, I love Larry Bird, but he could be one of the biggest jerks ever. And yet it was part of what made him great. He was so competitive. I think Magic had a little bit of that in him too. So those are just two guys that have been kind of featured in the documentary so far. But yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think should worry about that in the least. That's part of what made him Michael Jordan.
Just one more about Michael. What was your relationship like with him behind the scenes?
Good. I had learned early on, because when I was in Philadelphia, I was with Julius Erving. So I had learned early on that if you didn't bother them with kind of silly stuff, they were going to respect you and appreciate the fact that you weren't bothering them all the time. So I tried with Michael, unless it was something where I absolutely had to go to him and say, hey, Michael, would you do this? Would you do this interview? Would you do whatever it might have been? I tried to stay away from that unless it was unavoidable. And then when I did go to him, he was generally, I mean, there were probably a lot of times he didn't want to do stuff, but he was receptive because I didn't bother him a lot. So I had a great relationship with him.
That's awesome. You were around that, obviously, the 97-98 season that this whole documentary is kind of using as a jumping off point to go through the dynasty, what have you. I was around it, working for the Chicago Tribune at the time. I don't know. My memories are that was really a team that was kind of on fumes. I mean, we can always play the what if game. Maybe they would have been able to scratch out one more title in a lockout shortened season. Maybe not. What are your overall impressions and memories from that 97-98 season? And in some ways, to me, that title is almost one of the most impressive given all the drama that was surrounding that team.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would go back to the third championship in the first three-peat and use that as kind of a template for the one that we're talking about, the last one, where it was, and I was there for that one, and it seemed like they were running on fumes and Michael was running on fumes. And we know how hard it is to win one and then to win two and then the near impossible task of trying to win three. So in that second three-peat, again, I would agree with you. I think that might have been the hardest of all of them. They're all hard, but that that third one, especially with everything that was swirling around them, the age of some of the players, the injuries, that had to be the most difficult to accomplish.
Yeah, and on our airwaves nightly on NBC Sports Chicago, we're showing that entire 98 title run, and currently we're in the Eastern Conference Finals. To me, that's the toughest series they faced, maybe in all six championships for sure, in the second three-peat, that Pacers series. What are your memories of that series?
Well, I remember that. I remember that, you know, the East, there was always a team, whether it was Detroit at the beginning or the Knicks, even the Hornets were a tough out. And then you get Indiana, who was on the rise, had some stars, well-coached. I would, again, not disagree with you on how difficult some of these series were to get through. It was almost as if, and I don't want to say the finals were easy in any of their championship runs, but it was almost as if those conference finals kind of set the stage, because they were way, I thought, more difficult than some of the other series they played, including the final series.
Yeah. What's going through your mind on a personal level as you're watching this? What are some games that maybe, you know, stand out or jump out to you as some of your favorite to call, or maybe some moments or shots?
It's been so riveting that I get caught up in it, and I'll make a comment to my wife as we're watching. I'll say, yeah, I remember that now. I had kind of forgotten that. And I had forgotten that Michael went for whatever, 50 or 54 or whatever in a game. And yet it was a game I did, but there were so many of those games, where Michael and Scotty as well were, spectacular, that it's hard to remember them all. I guess I probably should have written them down while I was doing it. Hey, I should remember this game, but. There's so many people always ask me, well, what was the one moment that you'll always remember about those? And I tell them, I mean, it seemed like every year there was one or two or three of those type of moments. So it's kind of like your children, you know, who's your favorite? There were so many memories, and they do come flooding back, and so many plays and so many games and so many quarters and so many halves, that were incredible. But you do, and this is the one thing about this, documentary, is that it is kind of bringing all that stuff back to you as you sit here. As you said, you went through it, I went through it. But sometimes you forget, about Michael's greatness and the greatness of those teams.
How many times would you estimate you have either come across, heard, your call of Michael's shot over Brian Russell in 98 over the years?
Tons of times. In fact, a number of years ago, somebody sent me two things. One, I think, was a Time Life book called The Greatest Finishes or something. In sports, so it encompassed everything, football, basketball, baseball, and the greatest calls, you know, of a last second win or a home run, whatever it might have been. And then there was another one as well, and The Crowd Roared, I think is the name of it. So that call, of all that I did, that one I'll always remember, only because it was the last one,
right?
You know, that was kind of the end. So I'll never forget that one.
Do you remember what you said?
Not precisely. I mean, I could go back and listen to it, but basically it was Michael scored and there was still time left, as
right.
You recall. But it was just that Michael had scored, the Bulls had the lead, and they needed one more defensive stop, I think. I was actually I was doing that game with John Paxson.
I know.
So that was kind of fun too, because John had been such a big part of, you know, the three earlier championships. So it was kind of cool to have him sitting next to me.
Very cool. It actually ties very well into segueing back to your least favorite subject, and that is you. You alluded earlier to how obviously this was going to be your swan song season, and we obviously miss hearing your wonderful calls on NBC Sports Chicago and wished obviously that you could have gotten a proper send-off. What's obviously you have to keep everything in perspective with all that's going on in the world, but just talking strictly at a personal level, has it been disappointing kind of seeing the season flame out like it's been? And, you know, what are your thoughts about the future in terms of maybe doing one last call, et cetera?
Well, it's been disappointing. There's no two ways about it. Been disappointing, but understandable that they had to at least postpone the season. As to whether or not they'll go back and play again, I've said many times that if they do, it probably wouldn't be, you know, till July maybe or something like that, and it would have to be the health officials would have to buy into whatever they were planning on doing. It's been disappointing, but by the same token, because this pandemic has been so awful, it's really hard to feel sorry for yourself when you see everything that's going on with the healthcare workers and all the people out of work, and so that's been just devastating. So it's kind of hard to say, boy, you know, I'm upset that I didn't get a chance to do this or that. Disappointed, but we'll see what happens going forward. We don't know whether they're gonna make an attempt to finish the season in some fashion, or whether they're going to call it a day and, you know, start next year.
Right. Beyond the actual work of calling the games, what do you miss?
The people, being around guys like you and Sam Smith and, Stacy and Chuck and Bill and, you know, just being around, the coaches, players, broadcasters, writers. I the one thing I've always said about Chicago is everybody's always had a great rapport, especially on the media side of it, with the broadcasters and the print guys and the internet guys, and so that's what I miss the most is kind of being with people. But I, you know, right now everybody's in the same situation. I mean, there's not a lot of social interaction other than what you and I are doing right now.
Exactly. You mentioned PAX earlier, and you know that obviously speaks to, you know, how intertwined you are with Bulls history. Here you go from calling PAX's shot in '93 to beat the Suns to later working with John for several seasons on the radio broadcast before John moved into the executive ranks. What are your memories of working with John as a radio guy?
He was so good. I've been blessed in my career. I've worked with, Hubie Brown was my partner for a number of years. Chuck Daly was my partner for a year. Doug Collins for several seasons. And PAX was right up there with, if he had decided he wanted to do that, he could have been a national guy. I don't think it was ever anything that he aspired to do. So that was never an issue, but he was really, really good. And the insight he brought, the one thing that was cool for me was that I had called those games and the shot he made in Phoenix and the other championship series of which he was a big part. And so to have him sitting next to you, not only the insight that he brought to the game in general, but the insight he brought about what it was going to take to win a series or to win a game within a series was immeasurable.
Yeah, and you mentioned I mentioned you're such a part of Bulls history, but you mentioned Dr. J earlier. You obviously have a history predating your lengthy association with the Bulls, and You know, you've done pretty good for a guy who went to a great broadcasting school and didn't really even take a broadcasting class in Syracuse.
How smart I am.
Yeah, exactly. So Neil, for those who don't know, was quite the high school basketball player in Indianapolis and then went to Syracuse, which is a great, great broadcasting school, but didn't really find his calling until he landed in Danville, Illinois as an ad salesman for a small radio station there and parlayed that experience into a gig with the 76ers. And I do have to ask you about that 76-77 team, just because I love NBA history. And that was that your first season in Philly?
That was my very first season, yeah.
You had pretty good timing, my friend, because that team went to the NBA Finals. Tell us some stories about that team.
Well, not only that, but I will tell you some stories about that team. But not only that, but then I left Philly and went back, and my return year, they won the title. So, but 76-77 was my first year in the league. And I had the Philadelphia 76ers, who were a heavy favorite to win the title when the season began. They, you know, that team was Doug Collins and George McGinnis and Julius Erving. I mean, they were loaded deep. World B. Free at that time, Lloyd Free, Daryl Dawkins. I mean, they were a loaded team. They were the first of the teams in the NBA that had an audience when they went on the road. It was incredible. And, you know, people were starved, obviously, to see Julius Erving play, but it was a really good basketball team, but dysfunctional. I mean, really dysfunctional. And if you ever want to hear about how much dysfunction there was, ask Doug Collins sometime. That's where I first got to know Doug. He was a player and a good one. And but it was dysfunctional, and the season, you know, they got to the finals against a Portland team who was, you know, not highly regarded, even though they had some terrific players, especially Bill Walton. But in terms of talent, the Sixers had way more talent, and just couldn't get it done. They took a big lead in the series, and then just completely fell apart. And that was kind of began the dismantling of that team, that 77 team that lost to Portland. They dismantled, and the team that then came back in 82-83 to win the championship only had a couple of pieces left from that team.
World B. Free is the author of one of my all-time favorite sports quotes in history. His version of a give and go is give me the ball and go to hell.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, it was an unbelievable collection of talent. And Gene Chu was the coach, and it just, you know, they were so talented that they were able to get through the regular season and get through the playoffs until the finals. And Portland under Jack Ramsey was just an extremely, extremely well-coached team. Reminded me a lot of that team of some of the Bulls teams in terms of how efficient they were at both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively. So they were really well coached, and they were I remember Jack McMahon, I after the final game in Portland, and Portland had defeated the Sixers, and I remember asking Jack McMahon, who'd been around the league as a player and a coach forever, and I said, you know, like, who in the hell are the Portland Trailblazers? I mean, you know, Bobby Gross. And, I mean, it was Dave Twardzik. I was like, who are these guys? And he goes, they're the team that just beat us like a drum.
That's great.
You know, so it was an interesting way to begin my NBA career with a team. A collection of personalities like you couldn't believe.
Yeah, no doubt. And not to turn this into a 76ers podcast, but you mentioned you left for 5 years. You went and worked calling Kansas City Kings games and then come back for that 82-83 season. And I got to just ask you one about that season because, number one, I'm a fan of NBA history like yourself. And number two, Maurice Cheeks is one of my all-time favorite people in sports. So what are your memories of that 82-83 season for working for the 76ers?
I couldn't agree with you more about Maurice. He's one of my favorite people as well. That team was built to win a championship, and I would put them up there in maybe the top five teams, championship teams, in terms of if you were going to have a playoff between five teams that you could pick that won championships and see who was the best was, I think they would be in the top five. They were really, really good. Moses Malone was just a beast. I mean, he was unbelievable. I don't know if people who didn't get a chance to really watch him play appreciate just how good he was as a defender, rebounder, scorer. He could pass the ball. He was really good. It was kind of at the end of Julius's career, so it was great to see him go out on top. And then, you know, really good guys like Mo Cheeks, and it was a really good basketball team, very well coached by Billy Cunningham, and I think one of the better teams to win a championship in the last couple of decades.
Well, you've called six championship seasons, one with the 76ers, five with the Bulls, and we don't know exactly what your future holds, Neil, but what tying this back to the Bulls, what do you want to say to we're giving you the floor. What do you want to say to all those Bulls fans who are listening to this podcast about your run and all you've provided for the soundtracks over the years for
well, it's been a fabulous run. I have great appreciation for Chicago sports fans, and in particular Chicago Bulls fans, because I remember, you know, following those dynasty years when things were not so good and record-wise, and they hung in there and hung with this team. I think Chicago Bulls fans are not only knowledgeable, but they care. You know, they care about the Bulls and whether they win or lose. And you don't see that in a lot of cities. But so the fans have been great. They've been great to me. The people I've worked with have been great. You know, all the different analysts I've had, including my all-time favorite guy now, and Stacey King. So it's been great. And the people, the Bulls family has been wonderful. I mean, you think about the last two seasons, Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf allowed me to kind of ease back on my schedule and do fewer road games. And there aren't a lot of places where that would happen. There are a lot of places where they would say, well, we'll see you. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful ride. I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Oh, that's so well said. And since I get the last word, I'm going to just briefly embarrass you before we let you go. What people need to know about this guy that we've been privileged to have on today is that what I so appreciate about him, and what you will hear from everyone around the league about him is that he's about as egoless a person as there is in this business. It's all about calling the game, doing a professional job, and going home. It's not about him. You don't find that a lot in this business. And along those lines, Neil, it's been our honor and privilege to have you on the Bulls Talk podcast today.
Hey, my pleasure. You know, you're one of my favorite guys, and I appreciate the kind words, and hopefully you and I are going to be in a basketball arena somewhere soon.
We look forward to that, Neil. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Casey.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.